All right, Shavuot, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Aleph. We are actually going to begin on daf Tzadik Aleph. We'll say we dedicate our learning today as a zechus for Rafua Shlema for Chana Perel Bas Rachel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, we should have a complete and enduring Rafua. So we're picking up again today on daf Tzadik Aleph. So we left off, we actually have a lot still, even though we left off at Leba Pachos. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines down from the top on 91A, Tzadik Aleph. Says the Gemara, Leba Pachos, Yidinar Kamiflagi. So also remember, going back to yesterday's daf, we were trying to still understand the machlokes in Rabbi Kiva and Benanas about what they're arguing about. So the Gemara says, rather, Leba Pachos, Yidinar Kamiflagi. Rather, they are arguing in the case of ultimately, again, where there is less than a dinar left in the estate. And the shayla is, can you go ahead and divide up the estate if there's pachos midinar or not? Meaning, I will say, remember, if after you go ahead and you pay out the ksuvas, if there's less than a dinar left, so the shayla is, can you still go ahead and pay out the ksuvas or not? Mar savar dinar in pachos midinar lo. So one opinion says, Rabbi Osai, that it's only if there's a dinar left in the estate after the distribution of the ksuvas that you can go ahead and do ksuva distribution. But if there's less than a dinar, you cannot. When we say you cannot, so what would that effectively mean? If you cannot go ahead and distribute the respective ksuvas to the respective children, then remember, again, everything becomes part of the estate. And in that case, again, everything is split equally among the heirs. Umar Sarafi Lepakosi Dinar. And the other opinion holds that no, that even if there's less than a dinar left in the estate after the distribution of the ksuvas, still halacha lamais, you could do the ksuva distribution. I vahar Rabbi Shimon dinar kamar. But Rabbi Shimon is the one who said that there has to be a dinar. So maybe you'll say, I switch the shitas of Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon. I'm sorry, I said bananas and Rabbi Kiva before. That was incorrect. I meant Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon. This is the machlokas. Well, you can't switch it around because it seems to me that even the Tanakhama of the Mishnah requires that in order to disperse ksuvos from the estate, there must be a leftover dinar. Ela ki hanach tre lishnei kamoi ve'efoch. Rather, says the Gemara, it must be that in order to understand the machlokes Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon, that you must use one of the earlier two possibilities that we spoke about. Rashi says over here, ela ki hani tre lishnei kamoi bedinar mekarka o bedinar mishabadi. The machlokes Rabbi Osai is centered around one of two situations. Either whether or not everyone will agree that you need a dinar left in the estate in order to distribute the ksuvas, but whether or not does that dinar have to be of karka, could it even be metaltalin? Or the other possibility is, or bedinar mishibadi, if there is a dinar left, but that dinar is encumbered to someone else's debt, so lemaisa, again, is that considered to be a proper mosa or not? Ve'efoch, but ultimately, again, you will still switch around the shitas. Amar mar zutra, mishrei dirai papa, hil chasar, we'll say, what is the bottom line halacha? But remember how this all started. This whole mess started yesterday with a discussion, remember, in our Mishnah, of where you have husband married wife number one, she predeceased him. He marries wife number two, he predeceases her. Children of the first wife want their mother's ksuva, ksuvas ben indichrin. Children of the second wife want their mother's ksuva. So the difference is, children of the first wife come als yirusha, children of the second wife come als creditors. So the shayla was, are they entitled to ksuvas ben indichrin or not? Or do we say ksuvas ben indichrin only applies when everyone's coming with the same nature of claim? So now the Gemara says, Marzuch says in Dimra Papa, the halacha is that even if one wife died during his lifetime and he predeceased the second one, the children of the first wife still have a claim of ksuvas ben indichrin. That's number one. Number two, that's the Gemara's pasuk. Ksuva naasis mosa lechaverta. And I'll say number two is that, remember again, even if all you have in the estate ultimately is enough money for two ksuvas, you can distribute the first one because the amount of the second ksuva will still consider to be the most, or be the leftover amount in the estate that will allow for ksuva distribution. So bishlama iashmo inan achas bechayev achas b'mosal yeshlan ksuvas mendichen. Now what the Gemara is going to ask is essentially, why do I need both of these rulings? So says the Gemara, So if the Gemara would have just told me that in a case where wife number one predeceases him and he predeceases wife number two, that children of the first wife still get their ksuvas benin dichrin, and the Gemara would not have told me the halacha that a ksuva could count as the mosar, as the additional amount in the estate, hava amina, I would have said, if there is a leftover dinar beyond the ksuvas, then you could distribute the ksuvas. Ilo, lo. If not, not. And therefore, again, I understand why the Gemara has to include the statement that a ksuva could count as the mosar in the estate. Ela, lishmu inon ksuva nasis mosar the chaverta. Rather, but the Gemara could have just said that the ksuva can count as the mosar, as the leftover amount for the other ksuva, and could allow ksuva distribution. And I would have known from that, or we'll say de facto, that what? That lamaisa, that there's ksuvas benin dichrin, even in this case of where wife number one predeceases husband, and husband predeceases wife number two. The fact that you say that a ksuva, that one ksuva could count as the mosar, as the leftover amount in the estate for the other, by definition is referring to the case of the Mishnah, which is where he was married to wife number one, she predeceased him, and then ultimately he's married to wife number two, and he predeceased her. So meaning all that you needed to do is teach me that one ksuva could be moser for the other, and I would have learned that in that case of the two wives, wife number one predeceasing him, him predeceasing wife number one, that children of wife number one are entitled to collect ksuvas benin dichrin. So the Gemara says, Iyashmu inar hachi, the Gemara says, well, if it would have just said that, meaning if it would have just stated the halacha, that... if it would have just stated the halacha that one ksuva could go ahead and count as the moser for the other, hava amina kigon, listen to this, Rabosa, I would have thought like this. I would have thought, I would have thought kigon shenasa shalosh nashim, Rabosa, I would have thought that perhaps it's like a case of where he married three women, umesu shtayim bechayev va'achas v'mosam, two of them died, two of them predeceased him, and one of them, he died before. One of them, and the last wife, he died before the last wife. V'hoch d'mayis la'achar misa. Now you're going to both say, subsequently, after he died, wife number three died as well. And the wife that died after his death, yoledes nekevahi, had given birth to a girl. Right? So the first two wives had boys. The third wife had a girl. V'lav bas yerushihi. And I will say, in that kind of case, I would have said that the children of wife number one and children of wife number two are entitled to ksuvas benin dichrin. Why? Because they're both on the same playing field. And lamaisa, again, the child born to wife number three doesn't really factor into this discussion at all. Why? Because it's a girl. And ultimately, where there are sons, so sons will take the Yerusha over a daughter. But again, in a situation where one wife predeceased him and he predeceased the other, and the one who ultimately survived him gave birth to a boy, I might have thought that again we have to be choshesh for fighting, and therefore, now who is the fighting between? Remember, the fighting is between the son of wife number one and the son of wife number two, because lemaisa, remember again, they both want to claim their mother's ksuva, they also both want to claim Yerusha. The problem is that their claims are not the same. Children of wife number one are coming out Yerusha. Children of wife number two are coming out being creditors. I might have thought that in such a situation, therefore, there is no ksuvas benin dichrin to the children of the first wife. Therefore, kamashlan, that is not the case. Kamashlan, Rabose, what comes out is that halacha lemaisa, based on this sugya, or based on what the Gemara is saying over here, is that, again, in this situation of the Mishnah, where wife number one dies before him, and he dies before wife number two, then halacha lemaisa, children of wife number one still aren't held to the ksuvas benin dichrin. That's number one. Number two is that halacha lemaisa, ksuva could count as the moser, could count as the additional amounts in the estate to allow for a previous ksuva distribution. Number three is that halacha lemaisa, there has to be a dinar, right? There has to be at least a dinar left in the estate. And but lemaisa, again, it appears that that dinar need not be of karka. That dinar could even be of metaltalin. Okay, says the Mishnah. That's another interesting case. Someone was married to two women and they died. And then he died. So we'll say this is a simpler case. So both wives are predeceasing him. Okay, then he dies. Now, in this case over here, so the Yarshim, the inheritors, there are two parts to the inheritance piece over here. There is inheriting their mother's ksuva, And then after the mother's ksuvas are paid out, then they will divide up the estate of their father. So in this case, they both want their mother's ksuba. Ve'in sham elashtei ksuvos. I will say only one problem. So just for argument's sake, let's say ksuba of wife number one is 1,000 zuz, ksuba of wife number two is 2,000 zuz. Okay, so total 3,000 zuz in ksuba obligations. And let's say there is only 3,000 zuz in the estate. That's all there is. There's only 3,000 zuz in the estate. So what's the halacha? Cholkin b'shava. They divide up the estate equally. Now, I will say, now, this is not a surprise to us. Why? Because this is what we've been learning this entire time. In order to go ahead and pay out ksuvos, pay out ksuvos ben dirchen, what does there have to be? There has to be at least a dinar left in the estate after the ksuva distributions. But if there's not a dinar left in the estate, then lemaisa, again, it's not going to work. So in this case over here, if the value of wife number one ksuva is 2,000, value of wife number two ksuva is 1,000, and let's say there's a total of 3,000 zuz in the estate, in that case, we do not do ksuva distributions. Instead, I'll say, what happens? So ultimately, cholkin b'shava. We'll say what will end up happening in such a case like that is, simply, there's no ksuba distributions. All there is regular basic inheritance, Yerusha, and the children of wives number one and two will go ahead and divide up the Yerusha equally. Okay. Hayah Sham Mosar Dinar. But again, remember, if there is a leftover dinar in the estate, then Elu Notlin Ksuvas Iman, the Elu Notlin Ksuvas Iman, we'll say if there is a leftover dinar in the estate, then children of wife number one get their mother's ksuva. Children of wife number two get their mother's ksuva. And whatever's left over in the estate, they split. Elu notlin ksuva siman ve'elu notlin ksuva siman. Im amru yusamim, supposed to listen to this. Im amru yusamim, anachnu ma'alim al nichse avinu yafet dinar. Listen to this case. So remember, let's play this out. Wife number one, her ksuva is 2,000 zuz. Wife number two is 1,000 zuz. So if you are the children of wife number one, you do not want all of the Yerusha being split equally because you will not get as much. You really want your mother's ksuva. Here's the problem. Let's say there's only 3,000 zuz in the estate. So now you're going to get a piece of land. You're going to get it. That's worth X. So you still have a great idea. You know what? We will go ahead and we will accept upon ourselves a valuation of our father's property, that is worth a dinar more than it actually is. Meaning, let's say for argument's sake, there is a piece of property that's worth 2,000 zuz. So the Yisomim say, you know what? As far as we're concerned, the value of that property for us is 2,001 zuz. 2,001 zuz. And I will say, now what's the chap of that? Now, but they're going to get a piece of property worth, but they're getting that piece of property. That's fine. We owe the estate a dinar. How convenient. Because now once they go out and they pay back the estate a dinar, what happens? Now there is a mosar dinar in the estate, which now effectively allows for each set of children to go ahead and collect their mother's ksuva. So they are inflating the value of the property in order to create the situation where there is a mosar dinar left in the estate to allow them to collect their mother's ksuva. It's a great chap. So the Gemara says, but only one problem, it doesn't work. Ain shomin lahem. Ela shomin es hanachasin beis. We don't do that. We don't inflate property values. Rather, we go ahead and we allow for a proper valuation of the estate. Beis Din takes care of that, and if it turns out that there's not a mosar dinar left in the estate above and beyond the value of the ksuvas, then the mice, all the children just simply share in the estate equally. Let's say now, the estate is owed money. Now, actually, what Rashi points out, if you look at Rashi, in this case over here, let's say the father that died, we'll call him Reuven, right? So remember, our case over here is Reuven married Rachel, then he married Leah. Rachel's ksuva is 2,000, Leah's ksuva is 1,000. In this case over here, there's only 3,000 zuz, however, in the estate. So if there's exactly the amount of money in the estate to satisfy the ksuvas, then what's the halacha? We do not pay out the ksuvas. Instead, again, the children share in the estate equally. If there was 3,001 dinar, then we'd pay out the ksuvas, and then we'd go ahead and have them share in the rest of the estate equally. So now what's interesting is the following. Let's say Reuven's father, Yaakov, though, is still alive. So Reuven Nevach predeceased his father. So now what happens? And here's what's going to be almost said. That when Yaakov dies, who's going to inherit Yaakov? So the truth is his son's estate, his grandsons are going to inherit Yaakov. Because remember, let's assume for a moment that that Reuven was an only child. So Reuven's dead. So now again, the only other living relatives are Yaakov's grandchildren. So the Gemara says, well, let's say the children, specifically the children of Rachel, want to say, look, our father's estate is entitled to money. One day Yaakov is going to die, and our father's estate is going to receive all of that money. So it's as if really we have more than 3,000 zuz in the estate, so we should be entitled to collect our mother's ksuva. So the Gemara says it doesn't work. Doesn't work. When looking at the amount of money that an estate has, we look at the actual amount that it possesses and not the amount that it's potentially entitled to. Rabbi Shimon says, Afilu yesh sham nechasim she'in lahen achrayas enon klum achiyu sham nechasim she'ish lahen achrayas yeser ashtei ksuvas diner. Well, Reb Shimon takes us a step further. And it's not only any diner. It has to be what? It has to be a diner of property. She'ish lahen achrayas. So meaning if he just has an extra coin of a diner, that's not enough. In order for there to be a moser diner that will allow for ksuva distribution, it has to be an additional diner of real property. So we'll say, so therefore again, it's very important Mishnah. Because what it's saying is, bottom line is, that you could only disperse ksuvas ben dichrin. You could only disperse the ksuvas of the mothers if after ksuva distribution there will be at least a dinar, according to Reb Shimon, of real property left in the ksuva. But you can't employ any type of subterfuge or any type of other mechanisms to inflate the price of property to look at what the estate is entitled to. There has to be an actual dinar, at least a dinar of land left over. If not, remember, if not, kids will still get the money, just they don't get in the same ratios. Instead of each of them getting their mother's ksuva, everything is pooled in the estate, and it is divided equally among the heirs. Says the Gemara.
Is a dinar larger or smaller than a zuz?
A dinar is larger than a dinar is four zuz. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, Lezu Aleph, Lezu Chamesh Meos. So we'll say, remember now, the Gemara is just quoting a braisa that says the same thing. If wife number one had a ksuva that is worth 1,000 zuz, and wife number two had a ksuva that was worth 500 zuz, im yesh sham moser dinar, elu notlin ksuva siman, ve'elu notlin ksuva siman. So we'll say, what does the Raisa say? If there is a moser dinar, leftover dinar in the estate, then these children take the ksuva of their mother, these children take the ksuva of their mother, ve'im lav, but if there is not a leftover dinar, then yachloku b'shava. Then Abosai, they divide up equally. Abosai, I want to be clear. When we say equally, we're not getting into now Bechor and Pishnaim. Obviously, if there's a Bechor, he gets a double portion. When we say equally, what we just mean is they divide up the estate as any regular inheritance would be divided up. Says the Gemara, Abosai, now we get into some very interesting cases. Pshita, it's obvious. Merubin v'nisma'atu kivar zocha bahen yarshin. Abosai, listen to this case. Let's say now the following. So keep our simple case over here. Reuven's married to two women, Rachel and Leah. Rachel has a ksuva of 2,000 zuz. Leah has a ksuva of 1,000 zuz. So now what happens? The wives die. Children want to inherit their mother's ksuvas. Let's say at the time of death, the value of the assets of the estate was 3,100 zuz. 3,100 zuz. So we'll say, what happens if the value of the estate is 3,100 zuz? Then what? Then the children are each entitled to inherit their mother's ksuva. But then what happens? Prior to being able to collect their mother's ksuvas, the value of the estate decreases. And now it's only worth, let's keep it in simple, 3,000. 3,000, it's only worth 3,000. So what's the halacha in such a situation? So Gemara Pshita, Merubin v'nismatu kivar zocha bahen yarshin. That case is easy. Why Rabbi say? Because how do we judge entitlements? We judge entitlements at the moment that the mothers died. So we look at the value of the estate at the moment that the mothers died, and children became entitled to inherit their mothers as long as there was requisite value in the estate at that point in time. Even if the value drops subsequently, we still allow the children to collect their mother's ksuvas because at the time that entitlement was created, there was enough money in the estate. Rabbi say, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. The mothers died, and then the father died as well.
At the time of the one you value.
This is talking about here. You can see Rashi. Rashi says Kfar Sachu Bahen Yorshe Ksuva Hagidola Lezakos Peksuvas Iman Mishas Misa Shahaya Sham Moser Dina. This is at the mother's death. At the mother's death already, again, the value of the estate was enough that each child should be able to get their mother's ksuva. So the Gemara says the following. Thank you for clarifying that. So the Gemara says, however, mu'atin min ishrabumai. Well, so what about the reverse case? What about the reverse case? Let's say again, at the time of death, the estate was worth 3,000 zuz. Now I'll say, if the estate is worth 3,000 zuz, then what? Then the ma'aseh, there's no ksuva payout. All there is will be his regular Yerusha. But then what happens? The estate appreciates. And now it's worth 3,100 zuz. So what's the halacha? Tashma, the nichse de bay bar tzir tzur, mu'atin min ishrabu havum. Well, see, Gemara tells us there was an episode like this. The property of the house of bar tzir tzur, the property of bar tzir tzur. So mu'atin were small. Not mu'atin, not small. I'm sorry?
Meager.
Min ishrabu. So right? Meaning he had a small estate. So meaning for our purposes what that means is there was no amount above the value, the total of the ksuvas. He didn't have any additional value in the estate. But then they appreciated. So what happened? Va'asula kamed Rav Amram. Rabbi says, so some of the children came before Rav Amram. Amr lehu. So we'll say, remember, so it's interesting. Who came before Rav Amram in this particular case over here? So the children of the woman who had the smaller ksuva came before Rav Amram. Because Rabbi says, remember, if you have two sets of kids, one whose mother had a large ksuva, one whose mother had a small ksuva, if you are the children of the small ksuva mother, it is in your best interest that there will not be a ksuva distribution. Because if all the assets are pooled, you will end up getting more than if you just get your mother's ksuva and then have to split the rest of the estate. So what happens? In this case over here, there was meager assets, then the estate appreciated afterwards. The children of the mother with the small ksuva came to Rav Amram, and they said, Rav Amram, what should we do? So what did Rav Amram say? Zilpai sinu, you should go make nice to your half-brothers. Meaning, go make nice to the sons of the woman with the large ksuva. Perhaps they will agree not to withdraw their mother's ksuva from the estate, and instead they'll just go ahead and split everything equally. Lo ashkechu. Zilpai sinu, I'm sorry. Amr luhu, zilpai sinu, lo ashkechu. Amr luhu, ilo mafasasu luhu. So Rav Amram said, so they bet, and again, make nice to them. Hopefully they'll receive your overtures. But if they do not go ahead and receive your overtures, literally, I will whip them. Look at Rashi. Silu de lo mava dama, kol shinomotzi dam benokvo bebasar, knor shamta benidwin. So Rav Amram said, if they do not go ahead and accept your overtures and do not make nice, literally, I will whip them with a thorn that does not draw blood, which is another way of saying I will excommunicate them. Okay, so Rav Amram seemed to feel that in a case like this, Lemaisa, really what he seems to be saying is, the children of the mother with large ksuva actually do have a claim to the ksuva, but you should try to appease them, and if you don't appease them, for some reason Rav Amram said that I'll force them to play nicely with you. So the Gemara says, okay, Shadrin lekamid Rav Nachman, then they came before Rav Nachman, Amr lahem, Rav Nachman said, I don't know what Rav Amram is talking about, Kishim shemerubin v'nisma'atu zochu, ka zochu ben yarshin, again, so Rav Nachman says the halacha is pretty straightforward. In the same way that if the estate was worth 3,100, which would have allowed for ksuva distribution, and then the estate depreciates, that we look at the estate, we look at the value of the estate at the time that death occurred, at the time that it became collectible, at the time the ksuvas became collectible, and we lock in that amount, and as long as there's sufficient value in the estate, we allow for ksuva distribution. Same halacha is the other way as well. Kach mu'atim minisrabu. So too, again, if the assets of the estate were few, even if they appreciated, zachu bahen yarshin. At that point in time, Rashi says, zachu bahen yarshin ksuva kitana lachloka kol b'shava, ho b'shas misa v'havu b'hu moser. So we'll say, remember, where Nachman just simply says, the halacha is the halacha is the halacha, which is that we go ahead and we look at the value of the estate based on the moment that the ksuvas became collectible. And that goes both ways. So if there was 3,100 zuz in the estate at the time that the ksuvas became collectible, even if the property subsequently depreciated, we allow each child to collect their mother's ksuva. Similarly, if there was only 3,000 in the estate at the time that the ksuvas became collectible, and even if it appreciates, we still do not allow the children to collect their mother's ksuvas. Rather, again, we pool all of the assets, all of the resources, and everything is shared equally. Hahu gavra. Hahu gavra. Dahavu maski be alfa zuze. So that's another very interesting case. So there was a particular individual who borrowed 1,000 zuz. Okay, havulei trei apadni. He had two mansions. He had two mansions also. So what did he do? Zavinu chada bechamei shmeya, vechada bechamei shmeya. See, he sold both mansions, one for 500 zuz, and another for another 500 zuz. Now again, just we'll see this later on, but it seems to be that the point over here is he sold them to the same person. So two different sales, both to the same purchaser. So two mansions, one for 500 zuz, one for 500 zuz. Asabacho, Nebosai, now it's time. We'll call him Reuven. So Reuven borrowed a thousand zuz, and now it's time for repayment. But of course, Reuven doesn't have money. So what does the Balchov do? Asabachov, tarfa lechadminai. So we'll say the Balchov comes along, and what does the Balchov do? The Balchov seizes one of the mansions. He seizes one of the mansions. Rabosai, remember, in order for this case to make sense, we have to assume that what? That Lemaisa, again, in this particular circumstance, so the sale of the mansions took place after the loan, which means that technically speaking, the mansions were encumbered by the loan. So therefore, again, when Reuven doesn't have the money to repay, so the creditor goes and wants to seize one of the mansions. Asabachov, tarfa lechadminahu. Hadrik, so he seized one of the mansions. Fine. Then what does he want to do? He wants to seize the other mansion. Why does he want to seize the other mansion of Osai? Because remember, again, the total debt is 1,000 zuz. So now he wants to go ahead and seize the second mansion in satisfaction of the second 500 of the debt. So what happened? So Ahadur Katarif Liidach, Shakal Alpha Zuzi, Vika Azulagabe. So Osai, the guy who purchased the mansions comes over to the creditor with 1,000 zuz in his hand. And he says like this, Amrle, Ishavi Lacha Alpha Zuzi, Lachaye. If you're willing to accept upon yourself that the value of the mansion that you seized is 1,000 zuz, then we're all good here. Meaning, if you want to accept that the value of the mansion you seized is 1,000 zuz, which means that now your debt is satisfied with the seizure of the first mansion, then let's call it even. V'ilav, v'ilo, shakil alfa zuzi v'istalik. And if not, I want to give you 1,000 zuz, and please go away. Please go. You mean, give me back the mansion that I bought, and please accept this in payment of your debt. Okay. Sovar Rami Bar Chama Lemimar, Hainu Mas Nisin. So Rami Bar Chama wanted to say, this is the same case as our Mishnah. And I was saying, what does it mean, the same case as the Mishnah? Im Omru Yusum Hari Anu Malin Al Nechse Avinu Yafa Dinar. I was saying, why the same case as the Mishnah? Because what was the case in the Mishnah? Remember, the case in the Mishnah is where you have the children of the mother with the large ksuva, and they say what? They say, we would like very much like to be able to collect our mother's ksuva. There's only one problem. There's not a moser dinar. There's not an additional dinar in the estates. Remember, what do they decide to do? They say, you know what? We will inflate. We will inflate the value of our father's field to make it an extra dinar. And yet the Mishnah said that did not work. And yet here, what's happening over here, Rabosai? The guy who purchased the mansions is essentially telling the creditor, if you accept essentially an overinflated value of the mansion, if you accept the 500 zuz mansion as being worth 1,000 zuz, then we'll call it even. If not, I'm giving you 1,000 zuz, and please go away. Amrli Rava Midam, you can't compare the cases. Hasam Islahu Psidat Liyasmi. So in the case of the Mishnah, where the children of the mother with the larger ksuva are trying to overinflate the value of the estate, I will say that overinflation is going to result in a loss to the Yisomim. Why does it, now which Yisomim? It's going to result in a loss to the children of the mother of the smaller ksuva. Bless you, Kazari Bosai, bless you. Because again, remember, if they pay out the ksuvas, then the children of the mother with the lower ksuva is going to get less. But if there's no ksuva payout, then lemaisa, again, everyone shares equally in the estate. So the Mishnah is teaching me, you can't artificially inflate property values when that's going to create a loss for someone. Hacha mi isle pseida. But over here, Rabosai, there doesn't really have to be a loss, right? In this case over here, with the mansions, there's no loss. Why? Alpha yoiv v'alpha shokil. Because Rabosai, remember again, the guy who bought the mansions is offering the creditor a very sweet deal. Either if you love the mansion, you bought so much that you're willing to accept it as being worth 1,000 zuz, great. If not, what is the purchaser of the mansions willing to do for the creditor? He's willing to give him 1,000 zuz. So there's absolutely no loss over here involved for the creditor. So the Gemara says, v'tirfa bekama. Now, remember, let's play this out. Remember how this whole thing works. Reuven, the borrower, so Reuven borrowed 1,000 zuz, and afterwards he sold his two mansions to a kolam to buyer. We'll just call him buyer. To call buyer. So Rav said, at this point in time, buyer wants to hold on to his mansions. So what did he just do? He just went ahead and he paid off Reuven's creditor. And Rav said, now what happens after he paid? What's going to be his next stop after he pays off Reuven's creditor? He's going to Reuven, right? So now the interesting shaila is, how much of a claim does he have against Reuven? Now let's play this out. Meaning, let's say, the creditor agreed to accept the first mansion as full payment for the debt. So the creditor agreed to accept the value of the mansion at 1,000 zuz. So now the buyer is coming back to Reuven to get compensated for the money he had to pay to Reuven's creditor. How much money does he have the right to claim? On one hand, the valuation of the mansion is now what? Is now 1,000 zuz. But at the end of the day, his out-of-pocket expense was in fact what? 500 zuz, because that's what he bought the mansion for. So the tirfa, I will say, so tirfa refers to the document, or refers to the process, where now the buyer is coming back to the seller. In this case, the seller is Reuven, the borrower. Buyer is going back to the seller to go ahead and be made whole for that which happened with the seller's creditor. I know there's a lot of stuff going on over here. The tirfa bekamakasvinon. So how much is the buyer of the mansions permitted to recapture from Reuven, the seller / borrower? So that Ravina Amar Ba'alfa, Ravina said 1,000. 1,000, because now since the creditor accepted the value of the mansion at 1,000, therefore again, buyer could actually go back to Reuven and claim 1,000. Rav Avira Amar B'chamishmeir. No, Rav Avira says, no. The most he could go after Reuven for is what? Is the actual amount that he lost. How much did he lose? 500 zuz. V'hilchos on the halacha is B'chamishmeir. Rav Avira says, so the halacha actually is that in this kind of case, where the buyer paid off the creditor of Reuven, by allowing him to keep the mansion that buyer bought from Reuven, the buyer's claim is capped at the amount of his out-of-pocket expense, which is 500 zuz. Next case. So the Vilchasam HaKhamish says, Hau Gavra, Tamaski Be'mea Zuzay. But since this was a man who borrowed 100 zuz, Havulei Trei Katini Da'ara. He had two small pieces of land. So again, remember, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven borrowed 100 zuz, and Reuven has two small parcels of land. Chad zabinu bechamshin, vechad bechamshin. He sold off parcel A for 50 zuz, and parcel B for 50 zuz. Asa balchov tarfa lechad menayhu. But listen to this. So the balchov, remember again, the same Reuven, who sold off the property. So now again, his balchov comes to collect 100 zuz. Reuven doesn't have the 100 zuz. So where does balchov go to? Balchov goes to the people who bought the properties from Reuven. So asa balchov tarfa lechad menayhu. So the balchov seized one of the pieces of property, 50 zuz. Instead of section of the debt, Hadr asa v'katarif l'idach, and ultimately now he wants to seize a second piece of property to satisfy the remaining 50 zuz. So now again, remember, same case as before. You have one guy who bought both properties. Shakal kof zuzi v'ka'azul gabei. Suppose the purchaser of the land went to Reuven's creditor with 100 zuz and made the following offer. V'amalei yishavilach kof zuzi l'chaye. If the piece of property that you seized is for you is valued at 100 zuz, then good, we'll call it even. V'ilo, but if not, shakol kuf zuzi v'istalik, then let me pay you 100 zuz and please go away. Give me back the piece of land you seized and go away. So Rav Yosef wanted to say, is this not the same conversation we just had? Is this not the same case as the Mishnah where the Yisumim tried to overinflate the value of the property, and the Mishnah says they can't do it? Amrli Abaye said, no, me dummy, you can't compare the cases. Hasam is lupsei liyasmi. Rav Yosef, in the case of the Mishnah, the overinflation of the property represents a loss or a potential loss to the Yisumim. In this case, Yisumim being who? The children of the mother with the smaller ksuva. Hacha my psidis. But I'm also in this case over here, there's no real loss. Hacha my psidis. Mea yohiv. Mea shakil. The lender lent 100 and he's going to get back 100. Vitirfa bekama. So we'll say, if this indeed works, and the buyer of the two pieces of land essentially pays off the creditor to go ahead and go away, and the creditor, let's say, accepts one field, and he accepts it at the value of 100 zuz, so how much does the buyer have the ability to go after Reuven for? So Ravina Amar B'meya, Ravina says, we look at the value of the field, and since now the value of the field is 100, therefore Reuven has the ability to go, therefore the buyer has the ability to go after Ravain for 100. So Rav Avya Amar Bechamshin. Rav Avya says, no, we look at his out-of-pocket expense. His out-of-pocket expense was 50 zuz v'hilchasa Bechamshin. And therefore the halacha is that he's only permitted to recapture 50 zuz. Next case, Hogavar Davamaski Be Meazuze. Listen to this. Was an individual who borrowed 100 zuz, Shachiv. And then he died. Shavik Katina Da'ara Dahavishavia Khamshin Zuze. He went ahead and all he left behind was a piece of land that was worth 50 zuz. Suppose listen to this. So again, we'll call him Reuven. So Reuven borrowed 100 zuz, then he died. All he left behind in his estate was a piece of land worth 50 zuz. So Bal Chov, right, the creditor shows up, says, I want my money, tells you so, I want my money. So what does he do? He seizes the piece of property for 50 zuz. Okay. Azal Yasmi, Yavule Chamshi Zuzi. So what happens? The Yisoim come along, they give the creditor 50 zuz, almost like in an effort to redeem their father's land. So they pay him back 50 zuz. So the creditor says, thank you very much, gives him back the land, and then what? Vahadr katariflahu. Vahadr katarifla. So then what does the creditor do? Right after he gets the 50 zuz and he gives the land back to the Yisoim, what does he do again? He seizes the land again. Frank, thank you very much. You only paid me off 50 zuz. Now I'm coming, I'm collecting this land again to get my other 50 zuz. He's owed 100. So also the kamei d'abaye, so the Yisoim come to Abaye, they say, what do we do over here? Amar lahen, mitzvah l'Yisoim l'froch ovavien. So Abaye said, look, there is a mitzvah on the orphans to go ahead and to pay off their father's debt. To pay off their father's debt. Hani kamoi mitzvah avdisu. Hashto ki tarif bidin katarif. So we'll say, so again, remember, So Abaye says that look, Lemaisa again, when they paid off the first 50, so that was the Yisomim doing a mitzvah of paying off their father's debt. But now, ultimately, when the creditor comes along and seizes the property again for the second 50, that's appropriate. So we'll say what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that in general, Yisomim orphans have an obligation to settle the debts of the estate. So therefore, when the Yisomim paid off the first 50, that was appropriate action. But then when the Lokeach seizes the property, when the creditor seizes the property to satisfy the second 50, that's within his right as well. So the Gemara says, below Amran, we only say this, Dilo amru le hani chamshin zuzi dime ara katino. Ava amru le hani chamshin zuzi dime ara katino saluki salkur. And then this is very interesting. But when do we say that the creditor has the right to go ahead and repossess the land? Meaning, because this is a very interesting case. Remember, one more time. In this case over here, Reuven borrowed 100 zuz, then he died. He didn't pay back the debt. All he has in his estate is a piece of land worth 50 zuz. So the creditor comes along, and after the death of Reuven, seizes the property. Yisomim pay the guy 50 zuz. Now, they feel they're paying him 50 zuz for what purpose? To take back the land. What the Gemara is saying is, that's not really true. What they're doing is, they're doing something to pay off their father's debts, which is their obligation. And therefore, when the creditor comes back and now seizes the land a second time, in satisfaction of the remaining 50 zuz, technically speaking, he is within his halachic right. And that's what Abaye said. He's within his halachic right. Now, all the Gemara does is now qualifies that statement. When do we say that the creditor is within his halachic right to seize that property a second time? So that's only delo amrule hani chamshin zuzi de me'ara katina. That's only where the orphans did not say, the 50 zuz we're giving you, this is the value of the small piece of property. Aval amru le hani chamshin zuzi de me'ara katina. But I will say, if the orphans would have said to the creditor, when we're giving you the 50 zuz, we are buying back from you that small piece of land, then what? Then saluki salkua. Then Abaye said, at that point in time, the rights of the creditor have been removed from the land. Meaning, so if all they do is they give him 50 zuz, but they don't say anything, even though they think, why are we giving him 50 zuz to get back our father's land? If they don't articulate that, then all we view that 50 zuz as is a partial payment of their father's debt. But if they make the explicit statement, we are buying back our father's land, and the creditor gives them back the land, then essentially Abaye said, what is the creditor doing? What is he really doing? He's releasing his lien lien on that property. Once he releases his lien on the property, he does not have the right to subsequently re-seize it in satisfaction of the rest of the debt. But let's just go a little bit weiter. Hu gavra tizdamna luksuvasa di'imei bitova asana. So this is an interesting case. There was a particular individual who sold the ksuva of his mother for tova asana. Rabosa means a very small price. Now, what does that mean? How does a son sell the ksuva of his mother? Rabosa, what essentially the Gemara is saying over here is that lamaisa, technically speaking, he stands in line to go ahead and inherit the ksuva. Look at Rashi. Tizamna luksuvas di'imei shaisa nesua la'acher umacha ksuva b'chaye b'ayla. Obviously, what the son is saying is, I have some future rights in this ksuva, so I want to sell my future rights in the ksuva. Okay, so the Gemara says, obviously, no one's really going to buy that for a lot of money because there are so many sveikas involved with such a purchase like that. But he sells it for a little bit of money. But listen to this. But he says to the purchaser, "I asya im umaara lo mitzafina lecha." Right? Excuse me. "Im asya im umaara lo mitzafina lecha." But the seller, the son, says, "If my mother comes along and objects, if my mother starts yelling about this, I'm just telling you that I'm not going to help you out." In other words, that what he was saying is, if my mother objects to this sale, then obviously the sale will be voided. In other words, he's selling it without achrayas. He's selling it without responsibility. So I'm selling you my future rights. If my mother objects to this, I'm just telling you that the sale is void. What happens? Shchiva ime, the mother died. Velo ira, and she never objected to the fact that her son sold his rights in her ksuva. Va'asa ihu v'kama arer. But what happens? So now Rabbi Osai, the son inherits the ksuva. The purchaser wants to go ahead and what? Get his money. So what happens? Va'asa ihu v'kama arer. Now the son says, "No, I object. I'm not giving you my mother's rights in the ksuva." So Rabbi Osai, and he's saying, "And I told you, I warned you that if anyone objects, l'maisa again the sale is void." Savrayim baracham le'meimar. Ihu b'makum imekai. Sorry, Bar Chama wanted to say this objection is a valid objection. Why is it a valid objection? Because the son essentially now is in the place of the mother. And just like he said, the mother had the right to object, the son has inherited his mother's rights and therefore what? Can object to the sale as well. Amrle Rava, Nihida Achrayas Didi lo kabil ale, Achrayas Dida lo kabil, Achrayas Dide mi lo kabil. It is true, the son was not Mekabel Achrayas for what his mother would do, but he certainly what? Was Mekabel Achrayas for what he would do. Smina Bosai, the son said, if my mother decides to void this transaction, it's voidable. But the son never said that he would have the right to void the transaction. Therefore, Lemaisa, if the mother died without objecting, so Lemaisa, again, the son does not have the right to void this transaction. And therefore, again, the person whom he sold his rights to would be the true owner of the mother's rights in the ksuva. All right, the boss, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up here tomorrow. Mirza Hashem.